today, the council today is in the mix.
Right.
And we're going to start by looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 14 to 22. It talks about being members of the body. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not part of the body, it is not for this reason any less part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not part of the body, it is not for this reason any less part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed members, each one of them, in the body, just as he desired. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now there are many members, but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, or again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. Now, I had a bit of a Bible moment, and it got me thinking in a title that he's talking about the body there. But I started thinking about ingredients. You know, if you're making something, baking something, you're putting in ingredients to make a complete cake or loaf or whatever it is. So we're just going to look at a few ingredients, and it's surprising where it grows up. The two initial ones are particles, salt and sugar. Now, I had a vague idea that salt and sugar do go in various recipes together. But to me, salt and sugar seem opposite. Salt is bitter, sugar is sweet. So we're a bit, that phone's got loads of cookbooks, so I just browse through. Yeah, one or two, and it happens, I think, in cakes and things, salt and sugar. So, I started by looking at these. Now, salt, it's probably the most common, it's actually a mineral, but it's one of the most common things. If you ever swim in the sea and you get a mouthful of seawater, you'll know what salt is. And, you know, sugar. Well, we all know what sugar is. It is something we all like, and probably is the least healthy for us. But that's just about to salt. So it tastes bitter. It's a bitter taste. And actually, it can kill. If you just turn to Judges chapter 9, Judges chapter 9, verse 45. And it says, and Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he captured the city and killed the people who were in it. Then he razed the city and sowed it with salt. So why did he sow it with salt? Well, if you put salt on the one, nothing grows. It kills off what's there. So he was making the soil sterile. He was making it so nothing would grow. So as well as the killing the people, he destroyed the city. Its livelihood was destroyed because he sowed salt. But at the same time, salt is essential to life. If you have ever cried and caught the tears in your mouth,
it's
salted. So we need salt. We need salt to live. I know Bill, we used to call him, he took a lot of camp. And what he used to do was, if he felt the camp coming on, he'd get a bag of crisps.
Yeah.
I know a bag of crisps, and that would tend to take the
I get cramp.
Yeah,
and full salt.
Yeah. So it's a bit of opposite. And but you try eating salt, and you will not go very far on salt. There's two instances in my past where salt. It was an experience. When I was in the air cadets, we went to camp, and we stayed at the RAF camp, we went to the Naffa for our meal. The one particular morning, we went to breakfast, it's got a place of open notes on the table, with balls full and sugar on, and four other kids and started eating. And the response was, yuck! Somebody had put salt instead of sugar. Well, we were there. So it became unedible. You couldn't eat it because somebody had put salt instead of sugar. That was a contrast that it made. I remember going to America and they have what's called grits.
Yeah.
They wanted me to put salt on grits, which is what they're doing. Yeah, I like it. No, I'll put sugar on, trying. But the tough things to try and eat anyway, they're not really.
My
grandfather
used to put salt on
the porridge. Yeah, it's just strange. Yeah. It's strange. Which strange, because it's an odd flavouring item, so. The other week, we have a salt grinder. That's it. Top grinder, and I was told when you just press a button at the top and it comes out grinding. So we got fish and chips, and this top grinder had broken and I've mended it because I thought I'd put it back together. And I came to put it on after I mended it, and it all dropped. So I took a pile of salt on the fish and chips. I rescued where I could. It's still quite the crystals, even though it's still, So I rescued that fish and chips was salty fish and chips. I couldn't remove it all together, but they were edible, but it left an aftertaste as well. If you have too much salt, it's not very nice afterwards. In fact, I think. This time when you use salt to make people sick. So it's a weird thing, salt. I mean, it's rock. To ground it down to, it isn't right nearly down to powder, but it is crystal, it is a mineral. But it can be both extremes. But we can't do without salt. It just say, something in Matthew chapter 5 verse 13. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13. It says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It is good for nothing anymore, except to be thrown out and trampling on the foot by men. I've never known salt become unsalty. I don't know whether there is any way in the natural that it can become unsalty. But of course this is a spiritual lesson that it's talking about. That the salt has a particular taste. If you lose this taste, you can't identify it. I remember a little nature program. I don't know how many years. And these animals were going to this rock face and licking the rock face. They stopped them with their foot. They were extracting the salt from the rock. They identified it was there. So, but if salt loses its taste, it's no good for what it was meant to be gone. And that's the spiritual weapon that it's turned there. So in contrast to salt, we have sugar. Now, if you look in the Bible, you'll not find the word sugar at all. You'll find honey mentioned in the Bible, which is their sweetener. Sugar is our sweetener. But to get sugar, It has to be refined. Sugar doesn't occur just in the natural, not like salt. Sugar cane, sugar beet, you know, there are different things that we get sugar from. Then, to our way of thinking, sugar is an opposite to salt. But they're essential, sugar is essential. We have sugars in our body. Finally found out that excess sugar isn't good. I think David's learning that sugar isn't necessarily all good. If you have too much sugar, there are health problems.
Yeah.
But probably if you have too little sugar, you might have health in other ways. Now, honey that they used to have in the Bible, it talks about John the Baptist living on the wild locust, all locusts and wine, wouldn't it? If you turn to Matthew chapter 4, you're almost there. Chapter 3, verse 4. Because now John himself had a garment of camel's hair and a leather belt around his waist. And his food was locust and wild honey. Now he could survive on that because honey contains much more than sugar. It's not just sugar. For us, it's sweet life sugar. But I will guarantee that you could eat more honey than you could sugar on its own. I know some people don't put sugar on bread in order to do it. You don't put sugar, it's like honey rather, you put it honey on bread and onto it. Well, honey on toast. But you wouldn't, that was sugar. What you in the day, I sent out the value of sugar was like a rhubarb. There's things we used to do.
Well, we've got fillings.
Yeah, sugar does taste sweet, and it's nice to taste, but I don't think we've much sugar on its own. It's used to complement other things. But you see, that extreme that I had at the camp, of having sugar on salt and comfort into the sugar. That showed me how important sugar was. However, salt and vinegar on fish. But you see, sugar and salt go together in order to be human. So you get this opposite effect. And it's not going to think, in terms of us as well, with salt and sugar. And it's important that it's in the mix. Like the title today is in the mix. And it's important that both sugar and salt are in the mix. God's put them there. The baker puts them there as an essential ingredient to go together, to do different things within the mix. Those other things that people can tell me that salt does in within the baking, same as sugar. I mean, to me, I'm simplifying the sugar in that it's a sweetening, but perhaps sugar does more than that. Just the salt does more than the bitterness of taste. But it's strange that salt is bitter and sugar is sweet, yet they're put in the same mix. And they work together within that mix. So, I say, just hold that thought. Let's go on to another ingredient now. Flour. You wouldn't eat flour on its own.
How much
flour do we eat? Bread, cakes, biscuits. We've all got flour, haven't we? It's all. But we don't consciously think, oh, I'm eating flour. But if you look back in the Old Testament, you see a lot of the food was flour based. Look in Genesis chapter 18. Genesis chapter 18, verse 6. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quick, prepare 3 measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes." That's the first thing we thought of. We got yes, angels in the disguise. But they prepared that. This is back in Genesis. The interesting thing about flour is that in itself, is it doesn't start like that. What we see as flour, that's not how it starts. You see, it's going to be a strange way to watch the clothing last night, where there were... They were squeezed the corn seed, and it oozed out the... So the interesting thing about flour is it has to go through the mill before it can become flour. It's not a raw ingredient in itself until it goes through the mill and becomes flour. And then it becomes what the baker can use. Now sometimes they'll leave some of the outer part cooked and you get your grime, your roughage, brown bread again, white bread, the thing that brown bread is healthy because it's got a wheat germ and everything. Now if you look in the book of Ruth, which is just after Jesus, Ruth chapter 2. I didn't pick a verse out from this, but this is Ruth that goes gleaning in the field, Boaz. What is she gleaning for? She's gleaning for corn. Verse 2 it says, "And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, after one of whose sight I may find favour.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.'" And a bit further on, it says something then, about verse 16. Verse 15. "When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, 'Let her glean, even among the sheaves, and do not insult her.'" So she's just going out looking for what was left after they got the harvesting. "And also you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it so she may glean and do not rebuke him. And she gleaned in the field until evening. And then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about to use for her barley." So she was gleaning for barley, she was picking the barley seed, she would take that back. That would be perhaps the only food they had. That would, she'd be able to turn that into bread, perhaps not a green bread, perhaps just flat bread thing done on a hot plate. And it's, the thing about flour is, if you look at the ingredients, that's the bulky item. Cakes, bread, whatever. A lot of flour in the mix. It's perhaps just an ordinary substance in itself, but then when it becomes part of the mix with all the other ingredients, it becomes something special. Next thing we're going to look at is yeast. Now yeast is mentioned in the Old Testament, but it's called leaven. Not called yeast, it's called leaven. And it settles and affects the whole mix. It causes it to rise. I remember as a child we had a coal fire in the room. Yeah, got a built into that. And my mother would cut the bread, the cakes, before they were baked, after the next. She'd put them on the hearth and leave them there. And that would be so they could rise before they went in the oven. So the yeast had a particular effect on the mixture that flowed into the air and everything else that was in. And these aren't necessarily in the right order that you put them in, by the way, don't. I'm not a cook, I'm not a baker. But if you turn to Matthew chapter 13, Jesus had something to say about leaven. He says the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 pecks of meal until it was all leaven. He's talking about the kingdom of God being sown and producing. I don't know whether you would say it produced something complete. It wasn't complete until the yeast was put in. When the children of Israel were leaving Egypt, they didn't have time to go through this process. So they ate unleavened bread. So they became a feast day, or a feast time, known as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And it reflects his heart to depart quickly out of Egypt. They were being kicked out of Egypt after all the plagues that God had thrown the Egyptians. And the final one was the death of the firstborn. So they had to go out and get out quick. And first of all, they had to put blood on the lintels of the door. And that was a sacrifice, a blood sacrifice. Then they ate the bread, but they had to eat it hastily. So they couldn't, they hadn't got the time to put the yeast in to give it a chance to rise. So they had it unleavened, non-fermented, because yeast is a fermented agent. I always wonder, and I still don't fully understand, I might be able to explain it now, how yeast itself originates. Because one of the things they had to do was to get rid of all the yeast out of the house. Once they baked that bread, they had to get rid of it all. So they would have to start again creating yeast. And I don't know how yeast is actually formed in the first place.
How ancient bread making was. Right. And they used to be always banging on about getting your first mix of yeast, and purists used to sometimes get it from skins of grapes where they go a little bit. It's a naturally occurring mold,
like a fungus.
Yeah. And they used to get grape leaves or the yeast off the naturally occurring fruit and leaves. Yeah. But it used to be taking so long to get that started and recall it sorted out, and I never did that. Mm-hmm. But to pick up on your other thing, I've got one in Victoria, it's called a Victorian grinder, and I used to buy from Doug Mill wheat, the grains that you're talking about, to put in this little grinder. It's sort of like a little funny grinding away, like, and you get the whole lot in it. You can sieve it out, the brown stuff, the chaff and all the rest of it, but it's not chaff, it's the outer husk. It's not the husk, it's the brown coating, it's the bran.
Yeah.
And, but I tell you what, which when you did it, the mugs and loaves.
Yeah.
Well, if you didn't add other flour into it, it will like picking up a brick. Completely different to today's stuff. I'm not ready for it.
Like German
I'm going to be fed up after a while. But some of these people, they get really into that bread making, and they go crazy, like, to try and get a pure starter or they'll send off for I forgot the name of what they call it. It's a starter, basically. Yeah. I've got a fancy name. we'll send off for it for a French version and send off for it for a recent baguette or whatever.
Well,
yeah, some people get really crazy about it.
I seem to remember that when I was a kid that my mother used to get her niece from the court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The curry up south, a lot of things in open, things in cooking, and cut things off and,
yeah.
and that. So I think
you can still get it from Sainsbury's, you know, if you ask Bennett County.
Yeah,
there's no one. Yeah, if you like, if you go, can I have a little? They'll sell you it.
Oh, yeah,
40. Well, they do up to about 7 years in time, maybe, off the bread, but. Because I got it from Sainsbury's, not from Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
Probably, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
you might
need
a pet shop,
the
one.
Pet shop? Mm-hmm. Why would it be a pet
shop? It's a pet shop,
as well. Ah, really? See, the court used to sell things in bulk and flour, wouldn't
yeah.
it? We could play up in the upstairs at the local court because. Generally, the line is what then his mother or dad was high up in that particular store. And the upstairs was a big area with alcoves in. It might be in Houston right now, which I'm just connecting to, but this was flour and potatoes and all of them all stored in bulk. And we'd have a big shovel, measured stool, which were like a round barrel with an end to it, and you shovel in, and of course you could fill that first part up to a measure, sort of an amp. And that's how a lot of things were bought then. I mean, it's a bit of an oddity of one even now to these where there's so many things in Europe and you wouldn't collect. But back in the days of the court, that's how
interesting thing with that programme last night that you were talking about is that they added salt to actually slow down the process of the yeast. So it actually, when they made the loaf, when it had finished cooking, it wasn't finished until 3 days later.
Mm.
When the process of the yeast continued, which then gave it the gooey softness, etc. So it wasn't, because they actually, when they'd finished cooking, they opened the door and it was all gooey and you know, inside. Uncooked, and so then it just sat for the next 3 days.
What is this in there?
Malt bread.
Oh, malt.
Yeah, sorrel malt bread. Yeah, it was a program on last night. Week old part of it. And so salt slowed down the process. The other thing on salt, back to that scripture where you said about salt being trodden under foot, what it was in ancient times, they had a bag and they had like rock salt in it. And so when they cooked, they had this muslin bag and they put that in the cooking pot. Mm. And so that extracted the salt from the rock. They didn't have salt like what we've got. So they had this rock type salt. And so as it cooked, it took the salt out of it, and then after, once it had run out of saltiness, it was then emptied out of the bag and trodden underfoot, and it was no use for anything other than to be trodden underfoot. And then they refilled the bag with rock salt again to continue. So that's what the meaning of salt having no flavour.
It lost its flavour, but the rock had lost its salt.
The rock had lost its salt, as we would say. Yeah. But, you know, Jesus using this because they would look at that as salt in itself. And all the salt, you know, not understanding it fully, the people, they would say, well, there's no salt. It's not salty anymore, that. So it's lost its flavour. So it must have been slightly like a porous rock as well, you see.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a preservative, yeah.
The only way it's a preservative.
Yeah. And a steriliser.
Yeah, then they used to put some wound.
Oh, he used to jump as well. Sorry for interrupting.
No, actually, the next thing I thought of was butter. Now, butter isn't mentioned as a cooking agent. It's mentioned one or two things, but I think the nearest we'd probably look at is oil. But butter is a product of milk, and to me, it helps bind the ingredients together. You put the flour and other things and it sort of binds it together. Butter is always smooth. It works in different modes. If it's melted, it works differently when it's in its solid state as well. But I don't think you warm butter up particularly until its melted stage. You soften butter there to help it to be able to mix easier. But I think it binds the ingredients together. And as when you're thinking of the context, the spiritual context, you need those that can bind things together.
Mm.
You bind, this is talking about unity, it's talking about the strength of the mix as a whole. If you didn't put something like that in, it could be flaky, it could crumble, it wouldn't hold together. So butter's another important part. And I say, if you were looking at something equivalent in the Bible, you'd perhaps look at the oil as being a valuable cooking commodity. So really then, it was a case of what's the important thing that brings all these together? Well, somewhere along the line you've got to add water or milk. Now this is where we get in, that God's got to be in the mix. God's got to be in the whole of the mix, bringing it all together. And things are impossible without God in the mix. You can mix all these other things together, but if you haven't got the God-given ingredient, it all falls down. It's religion. It's a habit. It's anything but the power of God in it. But when God's in the mix, it transforms everything. And water is essential for life. Nothing exists without water. Things get really broken down in the biggest part of the water. In John chapter 4 and verse 10, it talks about living water. This is Jesus talking again. He's talking to the woman of Samaria, the woman of the world. If you knew the gifts of God, and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. See, she had perhaps some of the religious ingredients, but she hadn't got the main thing, she hadn't got the living water. And that's what she needed. If you look a bit further on in chapter 7, John chapter 7, verse 37. Now on the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood up and cried out, saying, If any man is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture said, from his innermost being shall flow rivers of living water. And it talks in Revelation chapter 7 about water flowing from the throne of God, a river, yeah. And and milk as well. Milk is a God ingredient, like water. If you look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 3 of verses. Therefore, putting aside all malice and all guile and all hypocrisy and envy and all slander, like newborn babes, long for the pure milk of the word, that by it you may grow in respect to salvation. If you have tasted the kindness of the Lord, it's the pure milk of the word, it's the water of life. Without that in any mix, there's no success, there's no completeness. God makes things complete, He makes the whole mixture complete. He takes the salt, the sugar, the flour, the butter, whatever other ingredients you put in. And he brings that into completeness. Because they all work together in unity. They might be opposites, might be contrasting functions, but within the mix, they do what they're needed to do. The salt does what it's supposed to do, the sugar does what it's supposed to do, the flour and the butter, they do what they're supposed to do. And God brings the water of life to that mix, brings the milk of the word to that mix, and they become alive. In Exodus, it talks about when the children of Israel were going into the wrong land. It talks about going into a land flowing with milk and honey. Milk and honey. Milk, the milk of the word. Honey, the sweetness of God. Just turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. Now I exhort you, brethren, by the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree, and there be no divisions among you, but you be made complete in the same mind and in the same vision. It's bringing the ingredients together. God brings them together in agreement, no divisions, and made complete. That's what it says in that verse 10. That's what happens when ingredients are mixed together. The right ingredients, doing the right thing, the right function. It all works together. Everything works together for those that are called according to His purpose. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, there's a bit of a warning there that we don't get strong ingredients. 14, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14 to 16. It says, do not be bound together with unbelievers, for what partnership of righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with the real? Or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? Or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God. It's just God warning about don't get involved with the wrong ingredients. More people have come adrift because they've latched onto the wrong ingredients. And it's soured the mix. It's, even churches that soured the mix. In a case of, it's a bit like a washing machine, you don't put white and dark colours together. You know, everything comes out pink.
I've had pink shirts.
So, yeah, so doctors, don't get in the wrong mix.
You know, if you're a washing machine, you're in trouble.
And just to know that a good baker puts love in the mix. Ingredient that isn't on the list of stuff, but it's the love ingredient. And that does make things complete. Colossians chapter 3, verse 14, it says, "And beyond all these, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity." And in Colossians chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "And in him, you have been made complete." And that is what God is looking for. When God's putting all these ingredients together, and we're the ingredients, we might have contrasting elements within the total mix. But God knows he's putting a mix together that's going to be complete and holy and perfect. So if you've got a job that is not quite as famous sounding as some other person, don't worry. Because if you're the butcher or you're the meat, nobody's really going to see you. They'll see the flour and the results and things, but you're in the mix and you're important. But remember that God is the living water. God is the living water. He's the milk of the word. It's bringing everything together.
So when you're going to keep running, 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 you're going to keep running,